Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
When the mindfulness bell rings, the opportunity is to be still. The opportunity is to open to what is. The opportunity is to discover an awareness that is always there, an awake awareness that we feel into. We notice our mind is focused on being present in this moment. So the mind is a wonderful servant when we put its attention on the spacious awareness that is always there, waiting for us to say, I have arrived, I am home. So we smile to the consequence of that realization. When we go home to the stillness, when we go home to the peace that passes all understanding, as Jesus said, when we go home to the love, the unconditional love, a love that knows no other, it's all the same love. And we allow ourselves to rest as that. Jeff Foster wrote a beautiful book called The Way of Rest. He also wrote another book called The Deepest Acceptance. What we are, he says, is this deepest acceptance, accepting life exactly as it is right now. We are not the one who is accepting it. We are the acceptance itself. And in that radical, deep acceptance, my Zen calendar quoted Psalms this morning, saying, deep calling unto deep always responds. And so we're calling unto this deep within us, with the depth of our own awareness. And then we choose to rest in that field. I hear Rumi in my soul, who says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. And when the soul lies down in that field of peace, love, joy, oneness, words are not necessary, he says. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. And then he smiles by saying, I will meet you there. And so we meet in this field of divine love that is always flowing, a field that doesn't know separation, a field of love by its very nature exists in oneness, in wholeness. There is but one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. And so we come together in this circle of light and love. And in this month of April, the theme is a whole new world. It says in the Bible, and there is a new heaven and a new earth. And so the new earth emerges out of the revelation of this new heaven, which exists within us. The kingdom of heaven is within and all around, as Jesus reminded us. And so we move into that consciousness of wholeness, that consciousness of peace, love, joy, those sacred abodes wherein God lies. And then we smile, because there's really nothing to do, only this to invite this sweet, sweet love to wake up within us. It's time to wake up. Take a deep integrating breath. Give an exhale, let go of whatever it is you need to let go of. Ah, and when you're ready, open your eyes and be here now. And step into that one seat, the seat of the one. Isn't it fun to come home to yourself, knowing that the self is always waiting for us, but we get so distracted by the world and all the stuff that's going on and the narrative. And all it takes is just a simple act of stopping, going within, and arriving at that place that's always waiting for us. The theme for this month is A Whole New World. And when I chose this several weeks ago, I remember reading scripture saying, and there is a new heaven and a new earth. So could we explore what that new heaven would be like, that new level of awareness that will naturally outpicture in the world of our experience? So we're always a choice point. Choose you this day where you're going to operate from. Are we going to operate from wholeness? You know, in the science of mind, they quote Dr. Ernest Holmes on the prayers for every day. And Ernest Holmes says, it is the perception of wholeness that is all healing. So could we look for the wholeness inherent within all of us instead of looking at the condition, which might be less than whole by our judgment? I know so many of you come to me with your story about your stuff. And you know that's not the truth about you. The truth is that there's really no problem that really needs to be fixed. If there is a problem, it's because we've identified as the problem. But when we let go of our identification with the problem, well then who are we? We are this wholeness waking up in time and space. And where is the teacher? It's all around us, but the outer teacher takes us to this inner teacher. And then of course we realize that the greatest teacher is life. So when life gives us these beautiful lessons, Miss Ashley, we use them for our growth and our unfoldment. They're all here on divine purpose. There's no accidents in this universe. I went to my wonderful teacher, Llewellyn, who wrote this inspired book called Awakening the World. And I was going to teach this, but I think it's maybe too advanced for so many of my students. But I will give you the very first paragraph and the very last paragraph, and you can see the depth of what he's pointing toward. Awakening the world has to start with awakening within ourselves. And then we contagion the world with our consciousness. Now, do we want to contagion the world with this nattering nabobs of negativity and fear and all kinds of stuff? Or do we want to contagion the world with hope and vision and a new order of awareness that is flowering? I was reading Thich Nhat Hanh just yesterday, and Thich Nhat Hanh said, the second coming of the Buddha will probably come through the Sangha. The Sangha is the community. And you know, on Wednesday nights, we've resurrected or reincarnated our Wednesday night satsang. And satsang comes from two words, sat and song. Sat is truth and song is Sangha. So it's a community sitting in truth. And so when you sit in truth, well, then this truth, and the Greek word for truth is that which unhides itself, well, then the truth has a way of coming up and revealing itself. So there's power. Jesus, when two or more are gathered in my name, in my nature, I am. The I am is there. So what if the invitation is to arrive in this we consciousness where we potentiate one another? So here's Llewellyn. Very first little paragraph on this wonderful book. Oh, on the Zen calendar, it said this. You are not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop. Rumi. He says, oh, drop, give it up. Oh, to be wooed by the ocean. The ocean? For a drop, it would seem to me, Miss Kim, you'd want to be the ocean. I mean, you've got a lovely little drop there sitting with a smile on your face, but you're really the ocean of love. And then Rumi says, all swimming in that ocean of love ends in drowning. Well, guess what happens? You're not there anymore. All that's left is the love. Is that too big of a place? I just wonder, Miss Tia. Here, the first step, he says, the first step on the spiritual path is in many ways the most radical and the most difficult for most people. First step, Miss Mary. It is to recognize that it's not about you. It's not about me. Because the me is the illusion. It's what we've created. It's the dream we're expressing as. So the first thing is to know it's not about you. The journey home, with a capital H, the journey back to God, is the journey of the soul and not of the ego. It is not the I that has an intention to get to a certain destination. You're not going to get there with the me person. Well, I guess we need to fall into the we person, don't you think, Miss Ashley? He says, we are not the pilgrim on the path, but we are the obstacle to the real journey in which the soul or self, that's with a big S, the substance within the heart of hearts, now returns to the source which it never left. It's the journey of the heart. You know, the latest thing, and I wanted you to see this, Anastasia, this is a book that is just blowing me away, but it's 1,000 pages long. It's called The New Republic of the Heart, The Ethos of Revolutionaries at the Level of the Heart and of the Soul. And it's all about communities that are coming together in the we consciousness to effect this greater change. So what if it's about stepping out of this individual that we've spent so much of our time cultivating and connect with the Sangha to those who are coming together in truth and discover that that's who we really are. So he said, it's not about you going on the spiritual path. It's about this divinity waking up within. Well, let's see what the last paragraph, where you arrive at the end of this awakening of the world, the very end of the book. He says, we can recognize that another story is being told in which our individual self is part of the wholeness of creation. He's trying to get us into this bigger realization that we are each other. We are the world. We are the ones who will make a better place. So let's start giving. That's the theme for the month, a whole new world. We are life in all of its manifold expressions of the one. You move from the me into the we and ultimately into the all. We are life in all its manifold expressions of the one, and we are here to experience the fullness of life and know that what life is God itself. This is all God. It's all good, and it's all God, and it's all here for us. Is that too big of a vision? Can you imagine if we saw the divinity in our own lives and we could then see it in the world, see the world as healed and whole? Boy, what an amazing... Every day, every moment, we have to say yes. This is Llewellyn. Every moment of every day we say yes, with a capital Y, to our beloved and to the beloved's life. In this primal yes, we create, he calls it his presence, and he apologizes. He says, I use the masculine phrase, but we know that the soul's androgynous. So you could say her presence in our life and in the world. We are not here to change the world, but we are here to experience it through divine eyes of revelation, to experience the world in its spiritual wholeness. And when you start feeling this wholeness in life, well, then you start seeing it in the world. Then we will see that it has already changed. And what most people imagine as life is just the fading images of a previous era. Looking through the patterns of our conditioning, we see a dying world destroying itself with greed and pollution. That's Llewellyn talking about spiritual ecology and how we haven't woken up. I mean, we can see all that violence on the planet if you choose to see it. That's our conditioned mind. We see a dying world destroying itself with greed and pollution. But through the eyes of revelation, that's that new heavenly place of perception, Miss Mary. Through the eyes of revelation, we will see a new world that is forming amidst the shadow world. And you know who it's going to happen through? It's going to happen through a sangha like y'all. People who dare to see the greater thing coming through. Not get stuck on what the eye looks out there. You know, there's a lot of nasty stuff going on in the world. You can go like this, or you can start creating a whole new world within you and then start creating it in our world out here. He goes on to say, this is his last little paragraph, through our yes, we claim our right to see with the light of a new consciousness and to experience what is being born within and all around. We are the fashion factors here. Choose you this day what you're going to create. Are you going to create a world that doesn't work, or are you going to create a world where everybody is loved and accepted? He says, and then in a moment, in a nanosecond, both so simple and so extraordinary, we realize that we are what is being born. We are this new creation. We are the universal Christ. We are the Buddha consciousness that's coming out in these satsangs of creation. His oneness is the center of life within us, and the mystery of life happens in every moment for each one of us. The mystery happens in every moment. Last week, I shared that Zen calendar who said, when I tend to the creation, I am tending to God. And when I tend, and the key word there is tend, that's a verb. When I tend to the moment, I'm tending to eternity. And you know, all we ever have is the moment. So, we are our beloved, revealing herself anew. We are the center of the circle, and we are the light of the world. We are the ones that we've been waiting for. Yeah. So here in the awakening of the world awakens when we awaken. And when we see that it's all part of this creative expression of life. And sometimes there's a lot of shadow stuff in there. And in that shadow, in that darkness, that's where we get to find the light. I've decided when we do our new class at the end of this month, I've dived back into Jeff Foster, one of my teachers. And he wrote a wonderful book called The Deepest Acceptance. And but I'm not going to teach that. I'm going to teach his book, The Joy of True Meditation. And Jeff Foster is a non-dual teacher. And he recognizes that by facing the darkness, we find the light. And so in his lovely book, The Deepest Acceptance, he talks about what we are as acceptance itself. If it's in your space, it's there, it's divinely appointed. So we're not here to resist it. All suffering is simply a resistance to what is. So when whatever arises, instead of resisting it, because if you resist it, you give it power, you learn to accept it as it is, and then to deeply inquire. Our Wednesday night satsang, I'm going to use a simple practice that Jeff introduced me to. It's called RAIN, the acronym, R-A-I-N. And so when we arrive in the satsang, the first R is to recognize what's arising for you. And God knows, so many stuff around people's mothers seems to be arising lately. Isn't that great that that's arising? Whatever arises, you recognize it. And then the A stands for you allow it. You don't make it wrong. If it's fear, if it's concern, if it's anxiety, you bring it right up into that light of awareness. So you recognize what's arising within you. You allow it. And then the I stands for you inquire into it. What is this showing me? How is this setting me free? And then the N stands for in a nurturing way. You do all of this recognition, allowing, and inquiring in a very nurturing way. We're here to be kind with ourselves. We're here to be gentle with ourselves. So here's Jeff Foster. Get a taste of his beautiful mind. The ocean's acceptance of its waves is beyond the conceptual opposites of acceptance or non-acceptance. He's saying that the ocean denies none of her waves. And so what you are is a wave on the ocean of love. The acceptance is the inseparability of the ocean and her waves. And as such, it has no opposite. So every wave, and he's using that as a metaphor, we are all waves on this ocean of life. Every wave is already accepted by the ocean. And it is this already accepted nature of the waves that goes to the heart of what he's trying to say in this book. This is the deepest acceptance of life on life's terms, which you as an individual cannot achieve. We don't do it. It's not like I accept this life, Miss Ashley. No, I'm the acceptance itself. And then I get to observe, what is this life showing me? So he goes on to elucidate. You don't have to achieve this deepest acceptance. It's already happened. And what's left for us is to simply and effortlessly notice that it is already happening in this moment and in every successive moment. So you're not going to run away from your life. You get to accept it and you get to meet it. Isn't that sweet? So if stuff is coming up to be healed, well, let's invite it in. Then there's Rumi. This being human is like a guest house. And come knocking at the door of your consciousness are all your stuff. So he says, invite them in, sit them down at the table. They may be coming to clean out your house. There's a metaphor to play with. It's all a game. Yes, what you are has already accepted this present moment as exactly as it is. And what you are has already said yes to what is. Otherwise, what is appearing would not be appearing. Well, I guess it's all divinely ordered, Miss Paula. You know, when you go on that trip, if you see something, it's all divinely intended. I'm just telling you, she's going on a two-week trip across the country, 2 months. What you are cannot resist anything that is appearing now, for it is everything appearing now. And everything is simply irresistible to who you are. Could we make all of life irresistible? So when we discover that the mold is the cause for our sneezing, well, we found out the cause for the sneezing is the mold. Well, then you have an opportunity. I have a little pug who's, you know, very compromised, and I've discovered at 4 a.m, when he starts to whimper, he has to go to the bathroom. And I used to kind of tell him, he's okay, go back to sleep. The whimper kept going. And I knew that he wasn't barking, he was whimpering. And so rather than to lie in bed with a whimpering pug, I get out of bed, I carry him down, I cross the street, I find a street light where there's some light outside, I put him on the street light, I position him, and within 30 seconds he's done 1 and 2, and he fell in 2, and I picked him up and I gave him a hug and said, deeply acceptance goes all the way. Everything is simply irresistible. So to accept thoughts and feelings is to simply gently, effortlessly notice that in this moment those thoughts and feelings have already been accepted, and so let's observe them, that they have already been allowed in, because they're here already. So accepting is not a time-bound achievement, he says, but is a never-ending present moment reality, to be with what is. I took Tia outside because I noticed that one of the containers out here, a tomato had planted herself from last year, and now there's a tomato growing in that little pot right by the back door. I put a little cage around her. Now, am I going to shame that little tomato plant for throwing a seed down, and now she's pert and fresh, and she's got a cage? The deepest acceptance. There's a sycamore growing in the parking lot, and I remember it was years ago, there was talk about pulling the sycamore out because it was going to ruin the parking lot. But I said, let's leave the sycamore and make peace with the sycamore. Now she's becoming a lovely tree, and she's shading the back area. So what if when we let go of our resistance to something, it has a way of showing us its potential and its beauty? My garden is such a magnificent expression of love. Over these many 20-some years that we've lived there, I've planted all these odd little things, and now they're growing into trees and they're blooming. In the front yard, there's a red buckeye that's 20 feet tall. She's a native plant. She's never been more beautiful. And, you know, I grow the rare and unusual things. People stop by and say, what is that? And I say, I'm not even sure. I just plant them and nurture them. And they nurture me. Oh, and then the big epiphany is, and this is a huge epiphany for me, I've learned that whatever I tend, whatever I nurture, strangely, is nurturing me. All that nurturing I do for my blind and deaf pug, guess what? He let me know that he's taking care of me, as fragile as he is. I look at this big garden that's so demanding. She's such a demanding expression of love. As I go and nurture her, she nurtures me. The rhododendrons are blooming now. The white peonies, huge blossoms, are blooming now. It is just, there's the Virginia bluebells. The woods hyacinths, the whole front yard they've taken over. I'm invaded by the blue hyacinths. So the garden is breathtaking, and it's all because some crazy young man planted this and planted that, and now I'm reaping the consequence of that. And you know what? It nurtures me. Sometimes I'll sit in the garden and meditate and just feel all that love reciprocally coming back. That's how it works. What you sow is what you reap. So to accept thoughts and feelings is to simply gently, effortlessly notice that in this moment, those thoughts and feelings have already been accepted. So it's not a time-bound achievement. It's a never-ending present moment reality. You cannot accept because you are acceptance itself. You're not really a separate person. You are an effortless yes to this moment. You're not really a person. You are an effortless yes to this moment. Yes, yes, yes. I am safe. It's only change. I am safe. It's only change. Now acceptance is not a state that we reach in the future. Rather, it's something to rediscover in every moment, right in the midst of your present experience, here, now. No matter what is happening, acceptance is not a future goal. Rather, it's the present reality always. And if it's grace, well, then it's an ever-present grace available to all the time. So to live in acceptance of life, isn't that just the most juicy? So this whole new world is not about running away from the world. You know, it's about meeting the world right where the world is. And the world and all of us are always at that threshold of growth. And last week we discussed the four sacred abodes in which to grow. One of the sacred abodes in which to grow is to grow in that field of love, this divine love. And as I quote in my weddings, this divine love brings together and maintains together in harmony and balance those who belong together. So could we accept that divine love brought us here to the Center for Spiritual Living? I'm starting my 36th year this Sunday with y'all. And it's never been sweeter for me to know that it's as vital now as it's ever been. It's not about getting to a finish line and then you're done. No, it's about staying so connected to this still small voice, and when deep calls unto deep, could I find that deep experience of intimacy? I was realizing this morning my life is one big tantric experience. And you know, in Hinduism, they have those three pathways to God. There's mantra, yantra, and tantra. Mantra is where you say a mantra, you know. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. La ilaha illallah, there's nothing but God. There's mantras out the wazoo. Yantra are these symbols. These are ancient symbols that point toward the truth. They're all pointing, and meditating on any one of these can take us into that realization of direct experience of the one. But tantra, it's not a sex thing. I know it was co-opted by sex. Tantra is about energy of oneness. And when we allow the God in me to meet the God in Tia, well, then we're having a tantric experience. I have this crazy bulb that was growing in the patio. I brought it downstairs where I have some grow lights for some of the plants. And all of a sudden, this amaryllis starts shooting up from this old clay pot. And when Trey and I had some potatoes at Christmas time, and you know, you're peeling the potatoes and sometimes there's a little spud that's growing. So I cut those things off and I put them around in the pot. Well, now I've got potatoes growing out of the bottom of the pot and two amaryllis bulbs that are like 4 feet tall shooting up from this pot. And I carried it upstairs and put it in the window. And so now when I sit in my chair and meditate, I'm being looked at by two huge bulbs that are 4 feet tall and these little baby potato plants that are looking at me. And I'm just saying, isn't that lovely? I mean, they're nurturing me. Oh, there's, oh. The penguin. He's taking care of me. Okay. That is another form of seeking, if we're seeking acceptance. Acceptance is about recognizing yourself as that open space, as the ocean that already has accepted all of her waves, and unconditionally, here and now, it includes the wave of even our own non-acceptance. So could this acceptance accept the part of us that doesn't accept it? Because God doesn't really care whether you believe in God or whether you don't believe in God. And then you get around the idea of God. What is God? I think we need to kill God to know God. That was Meister Eckhart. Get rid of this old, yeah, kill God to know God. So many of us have that old God in the sky. You know, the Santa Claus God, the naughty and nice guy, who says if you do, this man was fixing my air conditioner and he was getting ready to retire. And he says, I'm going to Mississippi, and I'm going to see my son. He's a nice Baptist boy. And he said, I'm going to get myself right with God. I'm going to put 10% in that collection plate so God won't punish me. I said, well, is that how you get right with God? You put 10% in the collection plate. I'll have to remember that when I go to church. Getting right with God. They've got the old God, you know. What if we don't have that God? What if the God we have is so intimate that it's as close to you as your own breath? So then you take a conscious in-breath. And then you take a conscious out-breath. All there is God. And then in that wonderful book, The Story of Gaia, by a quantum physicist, a woman, I might add, from the UK, and she says it's important that we move from the me into the we and ultimately arrive at the all, that it's all the one life. And then as the calendar says in the classroom, bookstore, whatever, little poster on the wall says, and when you change the way you look at things, well, then the things you look at change. So when we stop looking at life as an object, and that we're separate from that object, and all we experience is our thoughts, when we realize that what we're actually looking at is our own self, out pictured in this world, well, then the world begins to change. When you change the way you look at it, it's all you. It's all good. It's all God. It's all here for us. I'm so inspired by this book, Anastasia. Well, I have to get this to you. It's called The New Republic of the Heart, and it's written by a scientist. And he talks about moving into the we consciousness, literally. And he talks about the wisdom of the heart. The heart is where we know oneness. So could we take our attention to this place where we come together in this field? I am you, you are me, we are one. We do that song at the end intentionally. We're going to do the hugging song today so we can hug each other knowing that you're only hugging yourself. And so just a tiny taste of the we consciousness, the new tribalism and the new republic of the heart. He quotes the Buddha, Thich Nhat Hanh, the next Buddha may very well be a Sangha. And it says, I have a profound responsibility to support your transformation, to make sure that you are living the most honored, respected, whole life that's possible for you. Because if you aren't living the best life for you, well, I can't live the best life for me, because guess what? We are each other. So if you aren't living the best life, I can't live it either, because we are intertwined in the oneness of life. So that's the we consciousness to you. And she says, this is called the we space practice. It's how we talk. It's how we listen. It's not just between you and me, of course, but in our families, in our communities, throughout our culture. In my work with groups, I have been exploring new ways of being in conversation that are structured to cultivate depth, intimacy, and tenderness so that we might find our interconnected. The we is now the whole field. It is the hotbed of creativity. So could we find ways to communicate with each other? That lovely lady that won the election here in North Alabama around women's reproductive rights, I heard her speak on one of these interview shows, and she said, it's because I had conversations with people. we discussed, what would you like your daughter's rights to be as far as her health goes? And she said, people want the best for most people. It's about having the conversation at the level of the heart, not at the level of our doctrine. And so she's trying to promote this as well. The ethos of our intensifying global predicament is making a whole series of collective emergencies highly likely. They will force us into unprecedented levels of cooperation and communication. We is the one that we've been waiting for, to find this republic of the heart where we can listen to each other, where we can talk to each other. This is where the new world is going to happen, from a loving place, Miss Anastasia, not from our heads. If we is now a whole field and a hotbed of creativity, could we open to that? Higher levels of discourse constitute an art worth cultivating by individuals and groups. It is an emergent but crucial art form still in its infancy, to learning to talk to one another, to listen to one another, and to find common ground. I remember when I was in a discussion with the Christians, and they were preaching all this negative stuff, and I said, didn't Jesus say not to judge? And then that kind of had them step back a little bit. And wasn't his message just to love one another as I've loved you? And then they step back to one another. So if we can have this conversation predicated on a new republic of the heart, maybe we could find common ground. What do you think, Mr. Robert?
I think so.
I think so too. Higher levels of discourse will constitute this art. We is a powerful opportunity. It's pregnant with possibilities, and it's specially compelling for practitioners and activists who take their civic responsibilities seriously, to sit down and have a conversation at the level of the heart. What is the best thing for gay people at this stage of our evolution? Are we going to deny the Equality of Marriage Act? Or are we going to strengthen it and say that everybody, God loves all her children, including her gay ones? I used to live in the closet for so many years, terrified to be who I am. And I finally came out of that closet, and part of me is afraid that I might have to go back into it to feel safe. But I don't. My new world is not going to ask that of me, is it, Tia? That I have to hide anymore. No, it isn't. So let me do a little closing meditation, and then we'll do a nice hug song, and I'll ask Jan if she'll ring the bell for me. Don't you love the mindfulness bell? Yeah, it calls us to be here now. It calls us to wake up. It calls us to accept what is. And then we listen. We listen to that still small voice. It doesn't get louder, but gets clearer when we become still. Yogananda had a little chant. You speak of mantras. He went, listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. And so in that deep listening, we feel held in the arms of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. Like a child who needs protection from a mother's warm embrace, we are held in the hands of grace. And so there's a feeling of intimacy with the breath, intimacy with the heart of hearts, intimacy with this one life that knows no other. This life that we all share is awake. It's aware. It's love itself. This one life that we share has the totality of possibilities as its gift. And so we breathe into the totality of possibilities, and we find that new heaven within. And we know from that new heaven, that new consciousness, a new earth, a new life form out pictures. And so we choose this day to affirm the wholeness inherent within us, The Bible says, whatsoever things are lovely and of good report, think on these things. And so we put our attention on the good, the God, and we call it forth. We put our attention on this emerging awareness that is so creative and loving, innocent and childlike. And we invite that sense of wonder. We hear Jesus, be like a child if you would enter this kingdom of heaven. And so the child within is filled with curiosity and imagination. And we allow that part of our being to awaken, realizing that we are eternal beings. We are jubilant and beholden souls, and we're having a human experience. And so we embrace the body of our experience, knowing that the gift is that we've been given this human life so that we can evolve, so that we can serve and offer our gifts to the world. We've been given a mind so that we can discern and choose how we're going to use this mind in the world. We open the window between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere so that the right brain can inform the left brain and the left can inform the right. And that's whole-brained growth. We court the questions because the mind is 10 times more creative in a question than in an answer. And so we live in the question, how then shall I serve? And we listen to that guidance within. Maybe the guidance would say, just give a friend a hug. And so in this deep listening, we rest because we have arrived in that sacred place of home. And we pay attention to this guidance system from within. All of life is a gospel. And so we say yes to the many messengers that come our way. We go into the garden and we look at these beautiful expressions of a resurrected life. We thought it was dormant and now it's blooming. And we say to these mysterious, beautiful expressions of life, teach me and show me the way. And then we listen as it shows through its example how to celebrate each moment, knowing that we're not separate, that we are each other. And so we cultivate the we space where we are one. Take a deep integrating breath and let go of whatever needs to be let go of. Again, a mantra, I am letting go of the things that no longer serve me. As I'm letting go, I am healed. I am made whole. And so we live in a practice where every moment is our spiritual practice. And then we experience the joy of true meditation. Be here now. Be love now. To be free now. To be awake and filled with curiosity. We celebrate this awakened consciousness this Sunday morning, and we take it out into the world, ready to celebrate the moment yet again. Take a deep integrating breath. Give a sigh for the divine. Ah. Let it be so.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.